Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 20th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, 55 Years Later, Game Goes On. Decatur Group meets monthly to play Bunko. If you want to know about the dice game Bunko, visit Sue Wood, Sonia Ellis, and their six teammates. Wood and Ellis are two of the original members of a 55-year-old Bunko group. We started in January of 1965, Wood said. The neighborhood get-togethers took place on the east side of Decatur. Ellis hosted the first meeting that included several ladies who have since passed on or moved away. Avis Batson and Liz Reddick were unable to continue meeting for various reasons. Sharon Walter, Eunice Grimes, Joe Grigsby, and Pat Nana are playing Bunko in the afterworld. Bunko requires groups of four players. When someone is unable to attend the game, the regulars will ask a substitute to take her place for the evening. Sometimes the sub will become a regular. That's how newcomer Phyllis Campbell came to the group. She learned about the game more than a year ago. "I didn't even know what Bunko was," she said. "Next thing I know, here I am." The enjoyment isn't just the entertainment of winning the game, it's getting out of the house, Campbell said. And it's also fun, Wood said. And the good desserts, said Bella Miller. Every month, a member of the group will host the game. Each person takes a turn, Wood said, and we go out for Christmas, so it comes around about every 9 months. For their January game night, the current group of eight ladies left the dice in the cup to celebrate 55 years of Bunko at a local restaurant. They passed around pictures from their time together and even brought the Bunko bell, an important piece in playing the game. For about 2 hours, when the game is played, the eight players roll dice and keep score until they have a single winner. Some nights we talk more than others, Wood said. After decades of playing together, the ladies have let the discussions get personal. In a group like this, there are no secrets. They made me sign a waiver, Miller jokingly said. Nothing has stopped the group from meeting, including pregnancies. So 55 years ago, they gave me a baby shower, Wood said. 1 year, we all had grandkids, said Linda Hunter. The third Monday of the month has always been their special meeting day. That was football night, Ellis said, so the guys wouldn't even miss us. However, as a spectator sport, football couldn't compete with Bunko. They would be in the basement watching football, and the noise upstairs would disturb them, Wood said. Before they invite another player to join the monthly game, the others discuss whether or not to include her as a regular. There's balance, Wood said. Some people fit in with a group, and others don't. The experienced Bunko ladies have suggestions for creating a tight-knit group like theirs. Be on time. Be considerate, Wood said. Have a sense of humor, Ellis said. Go to the right house, Miller said. There's a sidebar to this article to start your own Bunko night. Gather 4, 8, or 12 friends. Decide on a meeting night. Prizes and food are determined by the monthly host. The average price to play is $5, which provides the funds for the award. Create a list of substitute players, and tables, chairs, and game pieces will be needed, which includes 3 dice per table, notepads and pens for each player, and the bell. And continuing on the front page, questions remain after trade deals. Illinois farmers will get a much-needed lift from 2 international trade agreements approved by the federal government last week, but experts are uncertain if their situations will improve in the long term. After exchanging hundreds of billions of dollars of tariffs for more than a year, The U.S. and Chinese governments agreed to the first part of trade deal on Wednesday. On Thursday, Congress passed the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, better known as USMCA, sending it to President Donald Trump to sign. The average Illinoisan will likely not be much affected by the deals, experts say. Instead, the largest beneficiaries will be corn and soybean farmers who have been caught in President Trump's trade conflicts with China and Mexico since 2018. Illinois farmers have been especially hurt by China's retaliatory tariffs in the ongoing U.S.-China trade war, forcing the federal government to issue $28 billion in aid nationwide. Wednesday's trade agreement with China, however, is more of a ceasefire than a peace agreement, said Jonathan Kappas, director of the Gardner Agricultural Policy Program at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. Really, what it does is kind of stop the damage that was initiated with this tariff conflict that the president started, he said. The deal should play out in two phases. Phase one, which began Wednesday, requires China to purchase $200 billion in U.S. goods over the next 2 years, including $32 billion of agricultural products. Chief among them are soybeans and pork, in which Illinois ranks first and fourth, respectively, in U.S. production. American soybean exports to China dropped 75% between 2017 and 2018, as China bought soybeans from other countries while exchanging tariffs with the U.S. Trump, however, said he will not lift America's $360 billion of tariffs on Chinese goods until Phase 2 is negotiated and implemented. "We see this as a sign of brighter days to come," Illinois Soybean Growers President Doug Schroeder said in a statement. However, he added, a long-awaited win for the soybean industry will come when soybean tariffs are fully rescinded. Unfortunately, that could be a while, said Todd Hubbs, a professor of agricultural economics at UIUC. It doesn't sound like Phase 2 is going to get done anytime soon, Hubbs said, because U.S. leadership could change after November's presidential election. I don't think there's any desire on either side right now to ruin the deal, but I don't see it happening before the election, he said. Carson Varner, a professor of international business at Illinois State University, who also owns soybean land, says farmers like him are willing to suffer in only the short term. We'd much rather make our money selling soybeans than receiving tariff aid, he said. Varner is hopeful, though, that China and the U.S. can strike a deal. He predicts Phase 2 also will allow Illinois to export more pork and agricultural equipment. Trump knows how to negotiate, Varner said. I think he told the Chinese he's willing to walk away from a bad deal, and so I am optimistic that this thing is going to move forward. Despite Trump calling the USMCA one of the biggest trade bills ever made, not much has actually changed from its beginnings as the Clinton-era North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, Kappas said. We're not talking about major reform of the trade agreement, Kappas said. If anything, the president has his trade agreement, so we can be assured, at least for his time in office, that maybe he won't threaten these trading partners again. The agreement mostly reinforces trade in the U.S., trade the U.S. already does with Canada and Mexico, especially corn, of which Mexico is America's top buyer and Illinois is America's second most producer. Every step toward USMCA passage is cause for celebration, Illinois Corn Grower Association President Bill Lay said in a statement. The USMCA also increases U.S. dairy exports to Canada, but that will impact more dairy-heavy states like Wisconsin. Both U.S. senators from Illinois, Democrats Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, voted for the bill. In statements, Durbin applauded its bipartisan support, while Duckworth said it works for farmers and manufacturers and features enforceable labor standards to support American workers. Duckworth added, however, the deal is not perfect because it does not tackle climate change. But Varner argues enforcing U.S. environmental standards on Mexico is demanding too much. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, he said. One negative for regular Illinoisans is that the USMCA could increase the prices of new cars because it ups the percentage of North American auto parts that vehicles must have to avoid tariffs. Because companies often pass on increased production costs and losses from tariffs to customers, the average American could see car prices increase between $470 and $2,200, according to the Center for Automotive Research. Varner argues, however, the USMCA's requirements regarding auto parts and higher wage standards are designed to spur investment in the U.S. and increase domestic manufacturing. I think it would cost a lot more if we abandon these deals, he said. Trump is expected to sign the USMCA this week. Mexico approved it last year, while Canada is expected to approve it later this year to officially make it binding. And next, Harmon elected president of Senate. Senator Don Harmon, Democrat from Oak Park, was elected as the 39th president of the Illinois Senate on Sunday after hours of behind-the-scenes negotiations. The race had been weeks in the making, and by the time the closed-door negotiations began Sunday shortly after 11 a.m., the field of candidates was down to two: Harmon, who has served in the chamber since 2003, and Senator Kimberly Lightford, a Maywood Democrat and the majority leader, who has served in the Senate since 1998. The negotiations took place in the Senate President's office, which was then occupied by John Cullerton, who relinquished the gavel Sunday prior to the vote on Harmon. The doors to that office were locked to the public and media. Harmon succeeds Cullerton, a Chicago Democrat who surprised his colleagues in November by announcing his plans to step down. He resigned his Senate seat shortly after Harmon was sworn in. Harmon reportedly held a 22-17 lead after the first blind ballot, with two senators calling in their votes via phone. Midway through the second round of negotiations, Senator Emil Jones III, a Chicago Democrat, whose father was the previous Senate president before Cullerton, spoke briefly with reporters about the intensity of the negotiations. "I don't want to say hard feelings, but strong emotions," he said of tension among Democrats. "The stakes are high, so emotions are running." The race appeared to divide the Senate Black Caucus. Jones, who is African American, said he backed Harmon in the race. But Lightford, also an African American, was vying to become the first woman elected Senate president. "I did vote for him, Harmon, on the first round," Jones said. "Going back and forth, sitting down with both candidates, I had to make a decision for my district. I want to best represent my district and picked which person I want to help me represent my district." Democrats emerged from their closed-door caucus shortly before 5 p.m. with a deal that Lightford would concede the race and support Harmon, but that she would also stay on as majority leader. After the caucus meeting, the full Senate convened for the formal vote. "Don and I have neighboring districts, and we have since 2002, Lightford said in a speech nominating Harmon. So we've been neighbors in the western suburbs and on the west side of Chicago. We've been neighbors in our district offices, Senate offices. We've been neighbors here on the Senate floor. I can't think of anyone else who would do a wonderful job of leading our caucus, and I look forward to working with him in unity. The vote went 37 to 12 in Harmon's favor. Two of the Senate's 40 Democrats were absent from the chamber, and Cullerton abstained. Harmon and Minority Leader Bill Brady, Republican from Bloomington, voted for each other as Republicans ceremoniously nominated Brady for the post. In a 2-minute media availability after the vote, Harmon said he expects unity from Democrats after the long race between he and Lightford. "You know, we're Democrats. We fight with each other, but we always seem to come together and rally around the important issues for working families of Illinois," he said. "I have no doubt that there will be work involved, but we will be able to do that successfully and move forward as a very united caucus." Harmon, 53, was born and raised in Oak Park. During the 2019 session, he was the principal sponsor in the Senate of the proposed constitutional amendment to overhaul the state's income tax system, which will appear on the November general election ballot. Earlier, he pushed for legislation to require gun dealers to be licensed by the state and to expand early childhood education programs. He has also been an advocate for voting rights and clean energy initiatives. A staunch advocate for working families, Don was instrumental in shepherding the most sweeping and consequential legislative agenda through the state Senate this past year. Governor J.B. Pritzker, who presided over the floor vote, said in a statement following Harmon's election. Harmon takes over leadership of the Senate at a time when some Democratic lawmakers are being targeted by a sprawling federal investigation. Former Senator Martin Sandoval, Democrat from Chicago, was forced to step down last year after federal authorities executed a search warrant on his state house office. And now moving to the local and state page, Tony Reed writes from Decatur. Author talks decamping to the great outdoors. The best tent camping of Illinois now available. Anyone struck by a sudden urge Sunday afternoon to decamp outside and go tent camping would probably have just sat back down on the couch and waited until the feeling passed. With the mercury struggling to hit 14 degrees and a wind chill that felt like being stabbed with ice picks, the great outdoors appeared forbiddingly inhospitable. But members of the Decatur Audubon Society have faith in the unflappable progress of the seasons toward warmer times. And so the guest speaker at their monthly meeting Sunday at Rock Springs Nature Center was John Sherrill, whose guidebook, The Best Tent Camping in Illinois, has now erected its second edition. This more than 190-page labor of love is a comprehensive look at the best places to pitch a tent in the land of Lincoln, and it covers a broad canvas. From state parks and recreation areas to fish and wildlife areas, state forests, and lots of other scenic spots maintained by the federal government, state or county conservation areas, Sherrill's documented wanderlust has taken him to them all. He told his 30-strong audience of bird watchers and enthusiasts that tent camping, separating you from Mother Nature by a thin fabric layer, stakes you a place in the heart of wild America. Camping is not simply a place to stay while seeing things you want to see, said Sherrill, 59. It's part of the experience. It's part of the experience of enjoying the outdoors. It's part of the experience of hearing frogs in the pond or birds in the morning and the smell of the campfire and all sorts of things. And part of the experience is the peace and the quiet. Sherrill has certainly got around in his own life. The Decatur man once worked in Africa as a Bible translator and is now a library assistant in the Children's Library at Decatur Public Library. He fell in love with the nation's wild side on a childhood hiking trip to Yellowstone National Park and said tent camping came to him naturally. First, because he was poor as a young student and it was cheap, and now because he has tripped head over tent pole in love with it. Judging by the number of audience members who lined up afterward to buy an autographed copy, Sherrill was pitching to the converted. "I haven't done camping for quite a while," said 71-year-old Ron Moore of Decatur, picking up his signed second edition. "But I'm thinking about it, and I might even go buy me a tent." And a sidebar notes that if you want to get a copy, the best tent camping in Illinois is available at Novel Ideas Bookstore in Decatur and from online retailers. For more information, you can contact Illinois-camper at gmail.com. And police report, high winds topple semi-truck. Illinois State Police said high winds blew a semi-truck off Interstate 70 in rural Effingham County on Saturday evening, causing the truck and the two trailers it was pulling to plunge into a ditch and roll over. A police statement said the truck unit wound up upside down, but the 62-year-old driver from Indianapolis was able to scramble out with only minor injuries. He was treated at HSHS St. Anthony's Hospital in Effingham. Police said the accident happened at 4:57 p.m. as the eastbound truck began swaying side to side in a heavy crosswind. The driver attempted to slow down but was unable to control the vehicle, police said. While swaying, the rear trailer left the roadway to the right and entered the south ditch. The rear trailer then overturned, pulling the first trailer and the tractor into the ditch and down a steep embankment. The driver's cab ended up on its roof, along with the first trailer, while the second trailer was left topped onto its side. No tickets were issued. And next, IDOT worker jumps guardrail to avoid car. Illinois State Police said an Illinois Department of Transportation worker from Effingham had to jump over a guardrail Friday evening to avoid being crushed by a skidding car. Sergeant Steve Korzanewski said the accident happened at 6:36 p.m. on Interstate 57, northbound near Edgewood, as the 55-year-old worker was putting out flares to warn of an earlier crash. A northbound car, driven by a 64-year-old Wisconsin man, hit a slick area on the road and began skidding off the highway to the right. "The worker saw the car lose control and he ran and jumped over the guardrail," said Korzanewski. He said the vehicle still managed to clip the fleeing man's legs, but he escaped with minor injuries. It was not stated whether the worker required hospital treatment. Korzanewski said the Wisconsin driver was ticketed for failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident. And next, Martin Luther King Jr. Legacy. Luncheon celebrates unity. From Decatur. A Central Illinois attorney who fought for civil rights in the 1960s in Mississippi encouraged Decatur residents and community leaders to follow the lead of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., whose legacy he helped to honor on Saturday. "In the Decatur community in Macon County, you know your struggles," said James A. Lewis, the former U.S. attorney for Central Illinois who served as keynote speaker for the luncheon at the Decatur Club. "You can come together, engage with each other, develop your best ideas, and apply these best ideas toward your struggles." Decatur's 34th annual celebration of the legendary civil rights leader brought together prominent local voices in education, county and city leadership, and nonprofit organizations for a luncheon at the Decatur Club. When we see the people that come to this event, black, white, and so on, it shows a union, said Derek Faxton, chairman of the Decatur Human Relations Commission that helps organize the event. That unity is so important going into the year 2020. The luncheon's theme this year was Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Dream with 2020 Vision. It is the first of two long-running traditions in Decatur honoring King. The annual Freedom March is Monday, January 20th, starting at the Decatur Civic Center. Participants will gather at 11 a.m. and march at noon. The route will head east to Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and proceed north to the Church of the Living God Temple No. 1, 1915 North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, where a ceremony is held. Lewis, who stepped down as U.S. Attorney for the Central District of Illinois in 2016, worked in Mississippi from 1966 to 1974, promoting voting and other civil rights. On Saturday, he recounted his experiences representing those in King's organization who were arrested for peaceful protests. Lewis told the story of when King, in 1957, began to lead the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, which focused on protests across the segregated South. He said protests are consistent with the best of the country's political tradition. Lewis reminded the crowd of how King applied some of America's best traditions of protest to challenge the country's worst practices. King, in 1965, turned his attention toward the right to vote, a movement Lewis became involved in when he went to Macomb, Mississippi in January. A month later, Lewis said students decided to protest because African American adults were not allowed to register to vote. Lewis was one of 50 who protested at their county courthouse. "People from the community braved real danger," Lewis said. White people in our community in Macomb had responded to civil rights activity with beatings, bombings, and killings. He said there were 17 bombings and 2 killings. On March 7, 1965, also known as Bloody Sunday, King, SCLC, and John Lewis, who at the time was the U.S. Representative for Georgia's 5th Congressional District, held a voting rights protest march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. They were attacked and beaten by State Highway Patrol on horses, James Lewis said. A few weeks later, with a court order protecting the protest march, Dr. King, John Lewis, and others completed the voting rights march from Selma to Montgomery with a rally of 25,000 people in Montgomery. This protest spurred Congress to pass the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe also spoke during the luncheon, offering words of encouragement for Decatur citizens to leave a positive impact in their community. "We can't fix the world. Fixing the country seems just as hard right now, but we can fix Decatur," Moore Wolfe said. "We are working on a revitalization effort, reinventing our neighborhoods. But this can't be just a city project without tearing down bad homes. About tearing down bad homes. It is going to take all of us to see that dream and then believe it and make it happen." James Lewis wrapped up the afternoon with words from King. "We are not going to let any injunction turn us around. We are going on." And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, January 20th, 2020. Please stay tuned.